I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Donna Sawyers. Donna, who started a business in the basement of her home, I guess 25 years ago now, right, Donna?
That's right.
And has now grown to a very substantial business, Fabulous Furs. It's a catalog business. You sell internationally, not just nationally at this point. You've had your furs, and they're not really furs. They're fake furs.
Yep.
But they're fabulous fake furs. And they've been everywhere. They've been on numerous movies, TV shows, Sports Illustrated. For those of you who like Sports Illustrated, they're on the swimsuit models on pretty much an annual basis, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you didn't really start out with the idea that you were going to start this clothing business, did you?
No, but, you know, so many ridiculous things have happened, including Sports Illustrated sending Kate Upton to Antarctica to shoot swimsuit edition. And so I think we sent them like 20 items, and they all went on that photo shoot. And so this is our fourth year in Sports Illustrated swimsuit. So none of these things would I predict. But I started in my basement 25 years ago, and we offered a single product, and that was a kit so that you could sew a fake fur coat, just like I had, that I thought was the most gorgeous coat around. And then we quickly became ready to wear. And today, we are known for the world's finest faux fur. And faux is French for fake, because people look at that F-A-U-X and say, ooh, fox. But no, it's fake fur. And today, we're sold in Saks for the third year, and for the second year in Neiman Marcus. And we're sold in W hotels, and we have about maybe 1,500 wholesale accounts in addition to our consumer catalog.
So you're literally being sold alongside of those actual fur coats that
we're
sell
sold
for
right
thousands
next to animal fur, and I think that's a great sign. I did it just because I'm an animal lover, and not a radical one, but I just hated the idea of thinking that kittens could be turned into mink coats. So that's why I started Fabulous Furs. I think the acceptance of faux fur is growing stronger all the time. And so when Nordstrom no longer sells animal fur, and you know, you see that all over the world.
What's different in your business now that wasn't there 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, wholesale is a huge part of our business, and that is a big part of our growth. And I believe once we started selling to Nordstrom, and I think that was in maybe 2007, we said, wow, we must look pretty good. If we can sell to Nordstrom, we can probably sell to anyone. So we started going to wholesale shows where boutiques and department stores shop. Being a supplier to many wholesale accounts is what has really changed our business. We also are vertical. We make about 60% of what we sell. So that meant that we had to ramp up our production facility. And really, I guess, first and foremost, we are now a manufacturer. So that is so different than where we were even five. Well, we were manufacturing 5 years ago, but now we have really ramped it up.
Well, Donna, I'm sure you're an inspiration to every person out there who has an idea about starting a business and is not sure whether they should go forth with it. Obviously, you did, and it's been very successful, and I look forward to continuing our conversation tomorrow. You're listening to Business Wise. I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Donna Sawyers. Donna is the founder of Fabulous Furs. Donna, you've been in the business now for 25 years. It's mm-hmm. been quite a story. You started this really because you wanted to not have to see animals killed to mm-hmm. make clothes.
So kittens specifically. We had four cats when I heard about kittens being skinned alive and passed off as mink teddy bears. And I was on my way to purchase a full-length mink coat. And I did a total mind change and decided to start Fabulous Furs.
Well, that's interesting, because a lot of people kind of pause about starting a business for whatever reason they're inspired. You just kind of went for it, didn't you?
No. No. I started with very meager resources and with a goal of just staying in business for a year. I started out selling a kit to make a full-length faux fur coat, just as I had done. It was only once I saw that people wanted ready-to-wear that it struck me. I'm a slow learner. I took a baby step at a time. And when I thought, people want ready-to-wear? All righty then, I better go make a coat. And so when Loretta Swit needed a coat, we sent it to Hollywood. I made it in my kitchen the night before. And so every step of our business has been that sort of mentality that, oh, well, maybe we can. Let's give it a try. So when Nordstrom became a customer in maybe 2006 or 2007, we had the capacity in our workroom to make 48 coats. They ordered something like 500. And we thought, oh, my life is over. How will we ever? But we bought a couple machines, hired a couple more sewers. We were all upstairs making the order for Nordstrom.
And you still make the clothes here, don't you, here in Northern
yes.
Kentucky?
Yes. Yeah, amazingly, we make about 60% of what we sell. And I'm so thankful that I had a grandma who taught me how to sew, because that is basically my background. I loved to sew. I wrote a syndicated newspaper column for 17 years, which makes me ultimately qualified to run a $14 million business. But I do have this wonderful son-in-law who came along, Guy Van Royen, and he's our CEO. So I had to quickly recognize the things that I can't do. I do know fashion. I do know design and pattern making and that sort of thing to a degree. And then find people who can do the rest.
What do you know now that you wish you knew 25 years ago when you started your business?
I think I'm glad I knew so little, because I think the more you know, sometimes the more cautious you'll be. That if I had any idea how difficult it is to start a catalog business, I think I'd have run the other way. You know, I have no regrets. I've loved every minute of it. I love the learning process. So maybe ignorance is bliss, or, you know, to be somewhat naive and have no idea that you can't do it.
Well, you know, some people say it's harder to start a business now than it was even 10 years ago. Do mm-hmm. you think that's true?
The number of regulations is staggering. I guess if you can somehow navigate around all those things, around all the regulations, I think there's always a way. If you want to badly enough, and if you know your subject, I think you'll find a way.
Well, Donna, thank you for this wonderful information. If people want to contact you or find more out about Fabulous Furs, is it the website?
Oh, please visit our website, fabulousfurs.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, the topic today is, we have a lot of people that are starting businesses either on a part-time or full-time basis. And one of the first questions we generally get asked is, what type of entity, what type of business should I be? Should I be a proprietorship, a partnership, a limited liability company, a corporation?
There are many things to consider, and certainly it's not a one answer fits all situations. It depends on many things, including if you have outside investors, for example, if you have employees, the nature of the business, the type of industry that you're going to be in.
And I think the one thing that you should know is that just because your respected peer formed a business and they were a certain type of entity, that should have no bearing on whether or not you should be the same type of entity. It depends upon your facts and circumstances.
Your own personal tax situation, other types of income that you have outside of the particular business that you're getting ready to start.
The important thing, I think, is to think through the consequences of each of the forms. And generally, you're probably going to choose between a corporation and a limited liability company. And then there's different tax aspects to those.
And my general advice is that it's much easier to go from a sole proprietorship, which is like a Schedule C, an LLC, for example, taxed as a sole proprietor or as a partner, move that later to a corporation, because it's very difficult to go the other way. It's very difficult to form a corporation and then say, oops, we made a mistake. We should have been an LLC. There's negative tax consequences many times. So if you start as an LLC or a sole proprietor partnership, you can always change to a corporation much easier than the other way.
Right. And when you say difficult, what you really mean is it costs you typically money in terms of taxes. And we're really addressing the tax consequences of these types of entities. There's legal consequences as well, which certainly you should get legal advice on.
Again, there's not a one-answer-fits-all situations. You have to look in a very broad 360-degree perspective about what it is you're trying to accomplish, and not just now either. You need to be thinking about what's going to happen the next 5 years, the next 10 years. Are you going to be looking for outside investors? What are they going to want to see? Are you going to sell the business? Are you growing the business purely to turn around and have a transition event in the near term?
Do you want to look like a business as opposed to an individual? There's also the appearance of your entity.
So bottom line, before you organize your business in any of the particular legal entities that we mentioned, seek outside advice. You do not want to make a mistake when it comes to the type of business structure that you are going to operate your business through. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, we recently had a question from someone about sending their child to college and how they should really help educate them to become financially responsible. And that kind of hit home because we're about to send a child to college. And obviously, one of the things you want them to be educated on is financial responsibility.
Yes, and unfortunately, that's not something that's generally taught in the schools. So as parents, it's critical that you set your child up properly as they head off to college so that they don't find themselves in a financial situation where it's very difficult to get out of in the future.
And really, that means so you don't find yourself in a financial situation where your kids are asking for money because they're in a bind. The first thing I always tell people to advise their kids, and we tell our own child, you have to have a budget so you know how much you can spend each week or each month.
That is absolutely very important for both the child and the parent to jointly sit down and talk about how the child is going to spend the money, because it really forces everyone in the family to talk about what you really need when you're away at college versus what you would like to have while you're away at college. For example, ours wanted to know if she could continue to get her nails done. Well, that is a want. That is not a need. So whether she chooses to spend discretionary money on that or not, that needs to be her choice.
Yes, and her father said, yes, you can. There's nail polish available at most stores.
Exactly. So again, there's always compromises, isn't it? But the key point there is to sit down and talk about that, because if you don't have a budget, then it's really not reasonable to think your child intuitively is just going to know how to monitor their money.
And along the lines of having a good budget, it's also prudent to develop a credit record when you're in college. And so you can do that by starting out with a credit card, presumably with a fairly low balance, that the child is the principal signer on.
Yes, it's just a good idea to, at an early age, and this would be a perfect time going off to college, is to put a credit card name in the name of the child so that that individual can start building up his or her own credit, so that when the time comes when they want a car, they want a house, you as a parent don't have to sign on that debt.
But you may want to monitor that credit card, especially initially, as well as their other spending habits, to make sure that they're not running up big balances due that they're going to have to get bailed out later.
Yes. For example, when we went to the bank just the other day with our daughter, we helped her establish a credit card. We have online access to that so we can see what gets charged on that card. The bill is probably going to end up coming to us, but we'd like to know as we go what's going on. And again, that card in my mind is only used for emergency type of situations, possibly just a little, just to maintain the credit, but it's not something that you use just because you go out and you decide you want something on the spur of the moment.
Well, and the other thing, I think it's helpful if you can teach your child to save. So whatever they're using for their monthly allowance or income or job or whatever, they should set some amount aside, even if they're just saving for a gift for Christmas, but to have some longer-term savings goal so they can get used to saving money.
That's right. So there are programs out there where you can have a checking account tied to a savings account. And then every month, again, once you come down with the budget amount, you can automatically have dollars shifted from the checking to the savings or to a money market or whatever, just to get that individual in the habit of savings. Because as you grow older through life, as we know, it's very important to have savings. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Chris Albrecht. Chris is the Assistant General Manager of one of the latest and newest venues in Cincinnati, the Horseshoe Casino. And Chris, you've been open for, I guess, almost 6 months now. How's it going?
That's right. It's been almost 6 months. We've been having a great time down at the casino. I've been very excited about being open and just offering another great attraction for both local Cincinnatians and folks in the regional area to come down to downtown Cincinnati. And we've had several million visitors already down to our site. And we've just been very excited going through our summer here with our concert series outside. A lot of activity going on in the casino. And looking forward, quite honestly, to what's going to be a very action-packed September for us.
And it looks like there's always people going in and out of there. So it's open, I guess, 24 hours a day.
We are 24/7. Folks come all times a day to enjoy the facility.
How about hiring? Have you managed to hire a lot of local people?
We did. So, you know, our big push was before our opening, which started really at the end of last year and worked into the beginning of this year. And we were able to get over 90% of our folks from here in the local Cincinnati region.
You've had a lot of diversity too, haven't you, in your hiring and your contracting?
Yeah, so really everything has been a focus. You know, from the diversity standpoint in hiring, we really wanted to hire folks that, you know, really fit into our market and were representative of the Cincinnati area. And then on the supplier diversity side, you know, we came out very strong, wanting to make sure that we put in an impact both locally and with our MBE and WB suppliers. And pre-opening, we were able to achieve that at a 37% level, and our goal at the time was only 20%. So I was very excited to do that. And as an ongoing basis, with our continued operations, we've been able to sustain at a 15% level with our diversity suppliers. And then on the local side, at an even greater clip than that.
How about attracting people from outside of Cincinnati or greater Cincinnati? Are you able to do that with the casino?
Given, again, being downtown and being able to offer our customers just more than just a facility. So our big push has been always to have a facility now going forward in a region that offers more than just the casino itself. So we have restaurant partners, hotel partners. We partner with the Reds and Bengals and other arts around the city and give our customers just a broader set of activities. So the Dayton market, the Indianapolis market, the Lexington market have really been great draws for our facility just beyond. And we're able to put them up in the hotel partners that we have both in Cincinnati and now Northern Kentucky.
Well, it's interesting because most casinos have hotels associated with them, and you don't. You actually use unrelated hotels as your partners, as you call it, for visitors from out of town.
Yeah, and we believe that's a great model for us right now. We have a very seamless shuttle service that works to get to all of our hotel partners, and our customers have been giving us great feedback to make that experience.
How's the entertainment side of the business working? I mean, I know you've had some outdoor concerts. Are those going to be on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, so we're going to leverage both our outside facility, our 1 acre square, which we call the Shoe out front, as well as our upstairs venue where we have 33,000 square foot of meeting space, and we use a 19,000 square foot ballroom that we'll do for more indoor activities coming up here in the fall. We've already announced Penn and Teller coming up and some other acts that are going to be inside. But outside, we've been having a tremendous summer. Enjoy the casino itself, but can come do a lot of different things from eating to enjoying some great entertainment acts as well.
That sounds fantastic. If people want more information about what's going on at the casino, what acts are coming up, can they go to your website?
Yeah, then go to our website, horseshoecincinnati.com. They can look through Caesars Entertainment.com. And for shows specifically, we partner with Ticketmaster to fill most of our events. So they can also go through Ticketmaster as well.
For Business Wise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Chris Albrecht. Chris is the Vice President and Assistant General Manager of Horseshoe Cincinnati. I think a lot of people realize that you have a casino there. Many people, I suspect, realize that you have entertainment. You have about an acre outside venue?
That's right, yep, acre out front.
But you also have an inside venue, a pretty large ballroom, and in September you're going to have an event, the Beer Baron Ball.
Yes.
Hard for me to say.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. The Beer Baron Ball was something that we've really been working with the Brewery District and Greg Hartman on specifically as an idea of really how Horseshoe Cincinnati can be a part of Oktoberfest. And we were looking for a big way to be a part of something that is really, you know, we think is a signature time of year here in Cincinnati. And the Beer Baron Ball was really something we've been working on and we're excited to have here on September 12th. We're going to be having this, what we consider just a great event to really kick off the Oktoberfest season, have a lot of fun festivities. We're going to have a special beer that's really just for the horseshoe only that we'll be having in our facility after the Beer Baron Ball. And really just, again, a chance for us to participate and show our support really is the title sponsor to the brewery district and really the excitement that we have around what that's going to become in our neighbor over the Rhine.
It seems like your philosophy is that you're really trying to get involved in the Cincinnati community and be more than just a place where people go to gamble. You're trying to be in part of the business fabric as well. You're trying to be a good employer. I know you've got a big diversity program.
Our philosophy and our partners with Rock Gaming has really always been about this is bigger than just a facility, and that really becoming part of the community and growing the community overall really helps everyone succeed. And so obviously they're great success in the Detroit market, us as a casino business in New Orleans, and then together as partners in Cleveland, and now here in Cincinnati, that is exactly what we believe, and we're very excited to be a part of the Cincinnati community.
Well, and there's something else exciting coming up soon that does have to do with gambling, and that's the first World Series of Poker event in Ohio.
Yeah, we are very excited to be hosting that. We've worked very closely with the Ohio Casino Control Commission to bring this event here to Cincinnati and to the Ohio market. And really, one thing early on we recognized is one way to, again, be a part of that Oktoberfest season was why don't we put this World Series of Poker circuit event right in the middle of Oktoberfest. We already have, you know, several thousand people coming to downtown Cincinnati, and what a great way for us to be a part of that than to have the World Series at our facility. And this is a tremendous brand, one that we've, you know, obviously as a horseshoe, started with Binion's Horseshoe in Las Vegas back in 1970, and has continued to grow and over the years onto ESPN. And we are, again, just excited to be the first one in Ohio to host a World Series of Poker event. And you know, we're hoping to get, several hundred, several thousand for our event here, just for our circuit event here in Cincinnati.
And how long will that last? How many days will that
take? So we're going from the 19th all the way to September 30th. With 12 unique events, we kind of label it 12 rings in 12 days. At a World Series of Poker event, as a circuit, you get a ring, as opposed to when you go to the main events out in Las Vegas, it's a bracelet. So the circuit events are all about getting the ring.
If people want to know more information about Horseshoe Casino, about the event you have, where's the best place to get it?
Yeah, can go through our website, horseshoecincinnati.com, caesars.com, and then, you know, follow to find out more about the World Series of Poker event, and then obviously just stopping down at the casino.
Well, Chris, thanks for that great information, and thanks for everything you're doing for Cincinnati. For Business Wise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Katie Blackburn. Katie is the Executive Vice President of the Cincinnati Bengals. And Katie, I guess you've been with the Bengals virtually all your life.
We moved from Cleveland, where my dad had lived because my grandfather had coached in Cleveland. And so after my grandfather had left coaching in Cleveland, my dad looked into doing what he could to get my grandfather back in football. And they started the franchise in 1968. The Bengals have been a part of my life my entire life.
What's new with the Bengals this year in 2013?
We think we're coming off of a strong year last year. We made the playoffs. We were pleased that in free agency, instead of going out and acquiring a lot of other players, our main move was to retain most of our own players. So we were able to re-sign Carlos Dunlap, Michael Johnson, Kevin Huber, Mike Nugent. There was a long list of our own players that we signed. And then we also added one outsider, James Harrison, who played for Pittsburgh. And we think between that and then the draft, we have a really strong group and something to build on going into this year.
And you still have a pretty young team, too, don't you, by NFL standards?
Most of our key players are very young at their position. So we're obviously looking for that to be part of our success.
How do you look at this season? Do you think you have a good chance of making the playoffs again?
Well, we always think we have a good chance of making the playoffs, but we really do feel that we have some really strong players at all of the key positions. The schedule is tough every year, year in and year out. There's never an easy opponent, so you have to go out there every year. We can play well to win. Hopefully we'll be able to do that and make it to the playoffs again this year.
Well, you mentioned James Harrison from the Steelers. What are some of the other new players that we might look for this year?
Well, we had a great draft. We drafted Tyler Eifert, a tight end from Notre Dame, and we really expect him to complement our Jermaine Gresham, the other tight end, who has been doing great things for us too, and we think that'll really make it difficult for defenses. And then we second round drafted a player from North Carolina, Giovanni Bernard, and he's been extremely impressive in the preseason and really complements Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis in terms of how they fit together in the running back position.
We talk about what's new with the team. What's new with the NFL this year?
It's interesting. Things are plugging along. There are a lot of teams. I think 8 teams have new head coaches, but so there are some teams that there's been a lot of turnover in that way. I think the NFL in general, they've put a lot of focus on health and safety of players, and so there's a lot of attention to that. You know, at the same time, it's just an exciting sport. We're looking forward to this season and getting it underway here shortly.
So if people want information about the games, the schedule, what's available, where's the best place for them to get that information?
Well, they can call our ticket sales number, which is 513-455-8383, or go to Bengals.com, where you can always buy tickets online. We do have season tickets still available, and then we have ticket packs available, which are groups of 2 or 4 games.
Well, that's great. Katie, thanks for that information. For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Katie Blackburn. Katie is the Executive Vice President of the Cincinnati Bengals, and it's that time of year. It doesn't feel like it yet because it's still pretty hot here, but football season is starting. And this year, there's a change for people who are actually going to the games. There's a change in terms of what they can actually bring into the games. And it's not just in Cincinnati. I guess it's all over the NFL. Tell us a little bit about that new policy in terms of bags.
The league has implemented a new policy. You can no longer bring purses into the stadium. Things can be brought in a clear plastic bag. You have 12 by 12 by 6 size, or a clear gallon Ziploc bag is acceptable and can be brought in. It's a definite change, and it's important to get word out so that people are aware of it as they come to the game this year.
Well, and I assume that's probably the aftermath of the Boston Marathon.
The league is doing 2 things, doing everything they can to ensure the security of the fans at the stadium, as well as they think it will speed up the process of entering the stadium with this policy also.
Are ticket sales going well?
Ticket sales have been strong. We have a really exciting schedule opening up with Pittsburgh, Green Bay, and New England as our first 3 home games. So those are really strong games. And our ticket packs have really been where we probably excelled the most in terms of ticket sales. And that's been the most appealing things to the fans. And that's either a group of 2 or 4 games. And so those have really been appealing to a lot of people this year.
You know, you're doing something, I guess it's not brand new this year, but you haven't done except one other time, I think, and that's you're on the HBO show Hard Knocks again this year. What's the idea behind doing that?
The league does the show Hard Knocks, and we did it once 4 years ago, and we had a good experience with it. I think everyone who saw the show really enjoyed it and thought it was sort of, well, found it very interesting to see what does happen behind the scenes. So this year, they came to us again. I think they were thinking that we're in a smaller market, and so it's a good opportunity for us to get ourselves out in front of people a little bit more. So we were amenable to having a second go at it. And I think they've really done an excellent job. All the shows so far have really been very well done, and I've enjoyed them.
Besides being, you know, an interesting business that you're in, the Bengals, something everybody follows, you're also in a family business in your business with the Bengals. You work both with your father, your husband. How's it like to work in a family business that you kind of grew up around?
Well, it just makes, at least for me, it makes me take a lot of pride in what we do every day. You really want more so than I think perhaps on average. You really want everything to go well, and you feel like you're representing the family. And I think, you know, the Bengals are really sort of a business where you feel like you're representing the town. And so there's just a lot of things that make you have a lot of intangibles that build on it to make you take even further interest in everything you do every day. You know, I think it's great. The people you see more hours in the day are the ones you're working with. And so it's great to be able to have some of those people be my family.
Well, they certainly understand your business, don't they?
we usually know what each other's thinking before they say it. But you know, it's I feel that I'm extremely fortunate, and I love it, and I'm really happy to be able to do it.
Well, Katie, thanks for your time today, and good luck this season for the Bengals. For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Jim Singler. Jim is a partner with the law firm of Keating, Muthing & Kleecamp. Jim specializes in the private client group. He is an estate attorney. He helps people minimize estate taxes, works with a lot of families to help reduce the overall tax burden. And Jim, I want to talk about a subject today that I think so many people don't understand. It can be very confusing, and it's about trusts and when it makes sense to have a trust.
It is interesting to talk about trusts in our current tax environment. It used to be that people would establish trusts primarily for estate tax planning purposes, but with the federal exemption amount right now of $5.25 million, that's a very high amount and touches very few people in the United States. And so people are looking at trusts and saying, do I really need these? And in a lot of circumstances, I still say yes, and here's why. A trust in the United States has become a will substitute. And there's various reasons that you establish it. One is for creditor protection purposes. If a parent leaves their assets in trust to the child, as long as those assets remain in the trust, they're suit and creditor protected, including from future divorces as well. And that can be a very powerful tool. In addition, there's probate avoidance. And if you just have a last will that disposes of your assets, well, going through the probate court system can be very costly and it can be very expensive.
The reason why you don't want to have to do that is because of the length of time until you can get your hands on the assets?
It can take anywhere from 1 to 2 years or more to ultimately close out the estate and receive the assets. And if you have a trust structure in place, it can greatly expedite that process.
I think a lot of people have always had the idea that the trusts were really only for very wealthy people, but as you've just pointed out, they're not just for wealthy people. It can make a lot of sense in many cases, including if you have a special needs child.
If you have any assets at all and you have a child with special needs, it is imperative that you sit down with a professional who is specifically trained in special needs trusts and can evaluate whether that's appropriate in your case. So, for example, if you have a will or a simple trust structure that leaves the assets outright to your adult child with special needs, and that child is otherwise receiving Medicaid benefits or Social Security benefits, those benefits can throw that child off of those governmental programs, and now you're having to spend down the inheritance to qualify again. A special needs trust can alleviate that structure by keeping those assets in the trust, and the trustee has the discretion whether to distribute those assets or not.
What else do people need to know about trusts, Jim?
What they need to know about trusts is there are a lot of advantages other than just estate tax purposes. And there's a lot of people out there saying the exemption amount is so high right now, I don't need my trust anymore. But they need to evaluate, do they want probate avoidance? Do they have a child with special needs? Do they want privacy? Because when you die and you go through the probate court system, all of that is a public record.
Women in our society today often live longer than their husbands. And what happens is when, say, the husband dies, or even if there's a divorce, the woman gets remarried, or it could be the man that gets remarried, but statistically it's going to be the woman. A trust can help protect the assets for the children and even for the surviving spouse against someone else.
Absolutely, especially as that spouse or the parent gets up in years. If you have the assets in a trust vehicle, that certainly can help protect those assets from other future spouses or other predators that would want to get their hands on that money.
And certainly it's one of those things where I think a husband and a wife, while they're alive, can sit and talk about what their wishes are, and then they can design the trust so that if something does happen to one of them, then those wishes are carried out. If folks would like information on how to reach you, Jim, what's your email?
It is jsingler, S-I-N-G-L-E-R, at kmklaw.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Jim Singler. Jim's an attorney. He's a partner with the law firm of Keating, Muthing, and Kleecamp in Cincinnati. And Jim is a member of the Private Client Group. He also specializes in estate planning, estate issues. And today I want to talk about those regarding closely held or privately held businesses, because those types of family businesses are a whole host. There's a whole host of other issues that we need to think about.
You're absolutely right. It becomes a much more complicated situation when you have a family-owned business, especially when you have non-family members that are owners as well. I have a client right now who's going through a very difficult situation. They did not do any planning. They had no buy-sell agreements in place, no sort of legal documentation. 50-50 owners, and now my client is now in a partnership with the spouse of the deceased partner, and she just expects that the business is going to continue to support her lifestyle for the rest of her life. And I doubt that that's what the intentions of the two parties were when they created this business together. It is so important that people put legal agreements in place, such as buy-sell agreements, that set forth the terms of play as far as what are we going to do with this business in the event we get divorced? Is my spouse going to own a part of this as a result of that divorce? $1,000? What if I become disabled? Do we have funding mechanisms that are going to pay for the disabled partner? What if the partner dies? These are all things that are absolutely critical that people think about.
And it's so hard to talk about.
It is extremely much more difficult to talk about these issues once something has already happened. It is difficult enough to put these agreements in place when everybody is still happy with each other. But as soon as you have an event, number one, I guarantee that you've lost value because you have not structured it properly. And number two, I guarantee that everybody's going to walk away unhappy with each other and you're no longer friends.
At what point do you start to advise a business owner to look at succession planning in terms of how he wants to dispose of his business to his children, to sell it? What vehicles from estate planning? Where do you suggest that occur?
Business owners hate to look and talk about these things because what they want to do is run their business. But they need to realize that the business succession piece is just as important as running their business. And if you are getting up in years, you're a baby boomer, and you are thinking about selling your business in 2 to 3 years, you can't wait till the 3-year mark and put it on the market. You need to clean up your books. You need to get a valuation and have all those processes in place years before you want to sell.
There is some significant wealth savings that could occur, actually, when someone thinks about how they want to dispose of their business, if they want to gift their business to their children. You can do all kinds of things in terms of minimizing the value by simply currently taking advantage of the gifting opportunities that are there.
That's right, Crystal. The exemption amount, the federal estate tax exemption amount, is currently linked to the gift tax exemption amount. And that's extremely high right now at $5.25 million. And so a husband and wife could pass a business that's worth up to $10.5 million free to their kids.
So if you haven't started to think about estate planning, now's the time. Jim, if folks would like information on how to reach you, what's your contact?
My phone number is 513-639-3961. My email is jsingler, S-I-N-G-L-E-R, at kmklaw.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.